What is the goal of this class? Okay. One of the issues that I think comes up when we're teaching and when we're always preparing, hang on a minute, I'm sorry, it just takes me a minute to get organized, to transition from one thing to the next. She was talking about transitioning in the last year, and I always teach about transition time. Okay. Okay. One of the things that comes up a lot when we're working in Kiruv and in communities and different things is being asked to speak a lot. One of the tricks I wanted to share with everybody is something that one of my teachers taught me years ago. Rossi Bressler taught me to do this for Parsha, and I realized that this is a good thing to have in general. She said when you learn Parsha, just go through the Parsha and write down the topics in each Parsha, and that way anytime somebody asks you to speak, you just look in your notebook and you've got the topics and you can pick a topic. So one of the things I also started to do is, besides the topics of Parsha, which I personally, I have to admit, I don't have on every Parsha in the Chumash, but what I found easier was doing like the months and the Chagim. So one of the things that I did was I developed for every Chag just like topics. Everybody who went through Ne'el Elf always jokes that they're Chaya Levine's cheat sheets. So I have them on every Chag. They're not all inclusive, but just like for ourselves, if we just want to just take a minute and think before I give you your cheat sheets, okay? What are some of the topics of Hanukkah? If I just take a minute and ask you, what are some of the topics of Hanukkah? It's funny, they have a board, but there's nothing to write on. Okay, Chinuch.
Like
fighting assimilation.
Internal, external.
Internal, external.
Miracles.
What?
Miracles,
great.
Western philosophy, society.
Okay, science. Okay, and the whole cultural issue of what the Greeks developed. Okay.
Power.
Okay, what else?
Standing up against the crowd.
Right. What else?
Women.
Right. By the way, anyone who's ever heard me speak on the Chagim knows my favorite topic is always women and. Women in Purim, women in Hanukkah, women in Rosh Hashanah, okay? Okay? And I think that's a very crucial one always whenever you're speaking in a secular audience, because they really believe that women have no role. And I always think it's so funny because they say, well, what about the fact that most of the Megillahs are named after women? Right? It's like just pointing little things out to people sometimes, okay? So I have here a whole list of Hanukkah topics, okay, which include things like menorah, light, okay, the concept of pure olive oil, hod, okay, and beauty, the concept of hod and the concept of beauty, why 8 days, okay? So, and it's funny because I don't have this on, but I recently did this for a Hebrew-speaking group, and they all said, sivivon. Okay, but also I'll just give you another interesting one, especially if you have an Israeli group. Who are the Maccabees? Who are the Maccabees really, besides being a sports team? Okay, I know that sounds funny, but for a lot of Israelis, it's just the exact opposite. Now, I want to just say something else because everybody knows this if you're working in America, but I always find it fascinating again. What are the two holidays that people most know about and keep, like statistically? Statistically, okay, in all the studies that I've seen in America, Rosh Hashanah and Hanukkah, because they're the most like the non-Jewish holidays. I always joke they're the Hallmark holidays, okay? And I think it's important for us to recognize, and also one of the reasons that I think it's Hanukkah is so important to capitalize is, you know, it's the one Chag. They don't have to keep Shabbos. It's so easy for them to do. And the irony of it is that the message of Hanukkah...
I always find that so ironic.
Right? It's so
opposite of what...
Like, it's so ironic. It's unbelievable to me that is the way it is. Okay, so everybody could take out the Hanukkah topics. I'll just pass it around. I guess you could pass around half and half. Okay, just, you know, so now I have these on every different chag, and you can make them, and you can keep them, and that way, for yourselves, I meant you should make them, not, okay. Now, I also, I want to talk about sources to look up in terms of when you're doing this kind of research, and I want to tell you that my favorite sefer in Hebrew, for people who could do Hebrew, now everybody knows there's h.com, and everybody knows that, you know, you could look in the internet and catch something quickly for preparing, okay? But I want to encourage everybody, because I like original sources. There's a small sefer, Or Gedaliahu, by Rav Gedalia Shor. He was one of the, like, mashgichim of the previous door. It's a very small sefer, and I brought, if anyone wants me to make copies, I just didn't know who would want, but I want you to see how every section, he has these paragraphs, okay? This is a paragraph. It's a shir, okay? This is a shir right here. That's what I love about this sefer. In other words, each section, he has something like on Chanukah 14 little of these things. On every chag, he has like a longer piece, and then he has these little paragraphs. By the way, the longer pieces are also not so long, and they are packed with information. So the longer pieces are a page, but I wanted to show you the little pieces, which if you notice from my book are all underlined for anyone who could see, because you can read it in 10 minutes and get a full concept from it, which I think is women, because one of the things that I find for my personal self is that I don't have that much time to prepare. I don't have that much time to learn. For myself, I like to learn. I think it's really important for us to fill ourselves up with like Torah learning for ourselves, that's on a level for ourselves, and then also to be able to adapt it for giving over to people when we want to learn. So I find that having something that's small and doable like this is an amazing kind of thing. Okay? And he has, the other thing I just want to tell you, another sefer that I found, like a great way to do it, is Sifsei Chaim is another sefer, which a lot of your husbands probably have sitting on their shelves. And again, Sifsei Chaim Al HaMoedim, you can just look at the topics even. His pieces are a little longer, okay? But you could just look at the topics, and you've got, like, all the topics there. Everybody knows Michta Mielio, who has it. I think that section has been translated already into English. My favorite is always Ali Shore. My husband's, like, a big Revolba person, so I love Ali Shore is always a place, okay? So those are places that I would recommend in terms of just, because I feel like it benefits on both sides. It gives us something to prepare, but it gives us something on our level also, which I happen to think is, like, people always say to me, like, what's one of your, like, biggest secrets and tricks for, like, keeping yourself going? That's one of mine. Like, always having something small that I can be learning or looking at so that we could grow. Okay. So what I wanted to do is give you, I wanted to show you how you could take kind of the same concept and turn it into a few different shirim depending on how you want to turn it. Okay? So everybody's following. Everybody's a little tired, so everybody's got that kind of, we've been listening for a while. Yeah. These are all Hebrew. So English, so I'll just tell you this. English, there's Seasons of the Soul, okay, which is an old one. I just want to say this. I personally think for anyone who can work on the Hebrew, the problem with the Or Gedaliah is it's got the Rashi script, okay, but you could get it. But I'm just saying, I just want to put a plug in for Hebrew for a minute. When my husband first did this to me, I thought it was like he was being really mean, okay? But I just want to say this. Like my husband, I wanted to get Michtav in English. I said, it's going to be so much easier for me. And my husband said to me, just try it in Hebrew. Like, I'll just help you a little bit. And the truth is, having learned how to look into the Hebrew sources is a big thing. So even though it's harder, I just want to encourage everybody, and I know this is America, and I live in Israel. People say, it's because you live in Israel. I'm like, no. It's because you're the types of sources that are available to you when you start to focus in on the Hebrew is like an opening of worlds, as opposed to when you stay in the English vistas. I'm not discouraging people from the English. I also listen to tapes, okay? And I just want to tell you something, like there's the Chazak line. Does everybody knows about the Chazak line? I don't know what the number is, but like Rabbi Waxman, there's so many good teachers. Chanan Jurevel is always there, Esther Baylor Schwartz. I just so want to encourage people to do these things, okay? Okay. So what I wanted to do was...
Who said they have the Chazak line on their phone? Oh, yeah.
Do you have the number? Do you want to give it to everybody? It's great. The Chazak line is a line that you can call in. They have like a 10-minute parsha every week. Like I start my Friday morning, I just listen. It's in English, it's easy. That's what I say. I'm not discouraging the English or the easy for ourselves on any level. And you can get so much from it. But when you have those, like for broadening yourself and really opening the ability to go deeper, having the ability to look into the Hebrew, even if you sit there with the dictionary, that's why I said like the Or Gedalia Yahu is so short, that even if you're sitting there with the dictionary, I am going to encourage people to say, try it. Try it just a little bit. Anyway, the Chazak line.
718-258-2008.
Okay.
What was the English book you also said?
Oh, Seasons of the Soul. It's an old art scroll. It is available. Okay, it's very old, but that's a good one on the Chagim. Okay, that's one of the ones that has like kind of more, again, bases itself. I just want to say this. In other words, the more you're going to be connected to the original sources, the more clear you're going to be. It's not like, I always joke, you know, like I've called Rabbi Orlovsky and said, Rabbi Orlovsky, like, remember this shiur I heard you give? Can you like give me the points because I'm going so-and-so place and I like just need it? It's not like we can't like use those kinds of sources and use like the H.com sources and the Torah Anytime, all these things which are all available, and I think they're great. But I just, again, I want to encourage people that you could take a primary kind of source and base your shiur on it, then you are going to just be, for yourself, in a different place. You are going to get more chizuk doing it that way, usually. Okay? I'm not going to keep pushing it. We don't have that much time. I think we're supposed to finish at 4 o'clock, and it's 5 to 4, but that's... I think that's the schedule, if anyone... What? No. I'm not going that short. I'm gonna. But we do need to have breaks for people who need to daven mincha, including myself. So, okay. So somebody said that the concept of miracles. Okay. So what I'm gonna do is I want to give like a taste bite of the kind of shiur that I will give to people and the kind of thing I'm looking for. Now, also anyone who knows. One of the things that I like is I always like questions. I always like to encourage discussions. I think the more invested we can get our students to be, the more they're going to gain from the shiur. So I don't want to do most of the talking. I want to give them an idea, and then I want them to move into the talking. Also, again, any of the shiurim that we give, we want to be able to gear it to our audience, whether it be students, whether it be women, whether it be people who... So that's also part of it, and picking the kind of material we want to use for the message we want to give over. So this is one that I've used a lot with students, okay? I've used it with teens, I've used it with students, I've used it with women. I happen to think this is like one that like goes over well because it's like a little more parav. Then I'm going to give you one that's a little less... Okay? And show you the different directions. Okay. This is one about miracles. Tonight we light one candle to publicize the miracle of Hanukkah. Now, there are lots of ways to publicize a miracle. If you wanted to publicize something, what would be the way you would do it?
Facebook.
Great. What else? Billboards.
Emails,
commercials, magazines. You would want it to be out there as bright and as much and as possible as could be, right? Okay, we're supposed to be publicizing the miracle of Hanukkah. What do? We stand at our windows and we light a candle. Okay, I would find that to be not the most effective way, I would think, right? Okay, and then we light the candles, we sing, okay, and then what do? We play dreidel and we eat donuts, okay? There's no real intense thing we're doing around Hanukkah, right? Okay, there's no Megillah, there's no written text we're reading, there's actually nothing to do for Hanukkah except to light those candles, which could take 5 minutes, sing a song, eat a donut, you know, maximum we're talking what, you know, half an hour if we push it? Okay, what's this about? Okay, not only that, it's very interesting for people who don't know this yet. Okay, Hanukkah was the last miracle that occurred chronologically. Okay, it's considered the last, you know, official miracle. And the light of the Hanukkah candle, the light of this miracle, is supposed to carry us through the darkness of the entire exile. So there's something very powerful about these candles. Okay? Now, another interesting thing is that our sages tell us that the Greeks brought darkness to the world. Now, I don't know how many people here are so interested in Greek culture or even are aware of how much Greek culture has affected our society. Okay, now I just want to interject this. Because most people that we're going to be talking to, Greek society is really not of interest. Like, how many of us really think about Greek society, right? So one of the things, if you're going to talk about this to people, is you're going to have to talk about how Greek society has affected us to today and what that meant. Because people are not really aware, except a few smarter people who went to like school and think about it. Sometimes people are aware that their sororities have Latin names and might connect it to like ancient, you know, historical thing. But otherwise, everything about it, if you're going to go into that direction, is like not of any interest to anybody. So if you're going to start to talk about that, about the Greeks and why they were light and darkness and the whole concept, you have to talk about what the Greeks were for our world, right? So you have to mention to people, because people don't, I know it sounds like so basic, but people don't think in terms of the fact anymore that the Greek system was the basis for philosophy, for science, for culture, for sports, okay? When the Greeks came out, their message was a really enlightened message for the whole world, okay? They were like the height of luxury. They were the height of culture, the height of everything that was new, that was modern, that was good, that was beautiful. That was what the Greek culture was. When the Greeks went to conquer the world, they actually used to go to every place and offer this culture and this worldview to people. They didn't have to fight. There were very few places that the Greeks actually had to fight, because most cultures just embraced the Greek vision, okay? And the Greek vision was about what? The Greek vision was about what I see, I can know. It was about learning scientific understanding of the world. It was about beauty, about externals. It was about living a life of luxury. It was about admiring the body. Do any of those sound like things that are going on in our culture today? So again, I would have a little bit of a discussion with whoever it is about what they can see as the parallels or what they could understand before I would go further. Yeah, just because of time, I'm not doing that with us. Okay. So.
I'm just wondering, do you ever find that you're trying to have a discussion and trying to make it interactive and no one's responding?
Okay. So, yes. So, I just want to say.
Would you just like move on and like say what you're saying, or like really encourage like.
Okay, so it depends on how well I know the group. If it's a group that I know and just making a joke about, okay, everybody, you could turn off your phones and you can like think for a minute. Let's like see if we can turn on our brains for a minute and think. And then I wait a minute and I give them the time to think. Like one of the things I think that happens for us as speakers, and that's why I didn't do this now, is people do need a minute to think if you want them to really respond. And sometimes what happens is people throw out a question, like say you're throwing out a question about the Greeks, it's so not on their minds, they're definitely going to need a few minutes. They're going to need a little bit of a lead-in, and then they need a few minutes to give them to respond. And very often I find people aren't patient enough to give people the time to respond. And then one person will respond, then you could get other people. If you really get no response, then say, okay, I see, like, you know, Greek society is really not, and then I would move on. Okay, but that has almost never happened to me. If I give people the lead-in and the time, like that minute that they need. And that's why you shouldn't don't plan to have a discussion if you don't have the time to let them, like, do that part of the thinking for themselves, because it is time consuming, okay? Okay. So
I just want to mention that on occasion I asked a question myself, like what that's happened once or twice, and I've just thrown out a question myself if I'm not getting any questions.
Right, a lead-in question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. So again, I would send out a lead out if I get nothing. If I really get no response, then I'll say, I guess everybody's tired. Let me just give you, let's go on with the answer. But again, usually I find that that's, if you've given a lead in question. Okay. So the only people that really stood up against the Greeks was the Jewish people. Now, originally, by the way, the Jewish people many of them also embraced the Greek world. In other words, it's hard for people to envision this, but actually, in the time of the Greeks, what happened is most of the Jewish people assimilated and became Greek. Okay, they took on all the Greek culture, the temple was defiled. Okay, now, what were the Greeks looking for? To do? What were the Greeks looking to do? And here's a very interesting thing, okay? When an army comes in to fight against a people, what does an army usually do?
Kills, destroys,
right? They use guns, right? If the American army were going to invade Israel today, right? They would come with tanks, they would come with bombs, right? Could you imagine the Israeli army guys coming in and saying, okay, we're here, we're going to go to the mikvahs and, like, make all the water impure in every mikvah in Israel? Could you picture that? Okay, what did the Greeks do? They went into the temple and they defiled the oil. Okay? The Greeks went into the temple. Why? Because there was something about the Jews that disturbed them. There was a message, there was something inherently different about the Jews than the Greeks. The Greeks were interested in culture. The Greeks were interested in external. The Jews, as Jews, our message is internal. We're interested not in just the external message of things, we're interested in the internal message of things. We believe that there's a spiritual purpose to the physical world. We believe that everything in this world every physical thing was created by God for a spiritual purpose, and there's a spiritual connection to the world. That was one of the main messages of the temple, was that the physical world had the potential to create spirituality and connect to God. That was a message that the Greeks did not want to accept. You can't see God. You can't see a soul. You can't see the internal. If you can't see it and you can't prove it the way they want it, as far as they were concerned, there was no use for this, okay? And therefore, there was another thing about the Jews that was very disturbing to them, and that was that the Jews claimed that they had a special connection to God, okay? And that they, right, had a unique connection to God using the physical world that we call, okay, I just want to say, that's the beginning of a shiur that I'm going to take three different ways. You just heard the beginning of the shiur, I'm going to take it three different ways. Maybe only two, depending on the time we have, okay? But at least two different ways now. Now I'm going to take it in one direction, then I'm going to take it in the next direction, okay? So I've just given you the whole thing I do with the Greek, with the miracle, with the oil, right? Okay, so now I'll say to them, okay, so what was different? The Jews believed in a concept that God watches over to us, that we have the ability to connect to God, and that he's actively interested in our lives and in every detail of our lives. That every action that we do has meaning, okay? And everything in our lives has a message for us. And that concept is called Hashgacha Pratit, that Hashem is concerned with each and every one of us. He's not up there in the heavens. He's actually here in the world concerned with every single individual of one of us. He cares about us, okay? And he never leaves us, okay? That's the concept that I told you before that Rivoldi says about he holds on to us and he's looking for us. And I'll explain to them about the whole concept of Hashgacha, okay? And then I'll talk about how Hashem, right, what's the significance, okay? What's the significance of this? The significance is, right, is that the way I see the world is that I see it as having deep meaning and I have a connection to God and I have an understanding of the meaning of the world. And that means that God cares about me, right? And that we have the ability to connect. Now, many people gave up hope. Again, most of the Jewish world gave up hope. And the only people who didn't was Matisyahu and his sons. And they said, the Greeks came to them and said, you have to write on the horn of the shore that you have no connection to God. He said, I'm not going to do that. Hashem loves us. Hashem cares about us. And I'm going to prove it to you. And him and his sons stood up and they fought against the entire Greek army. Now imagine this. Imagine if the rabbi of your community decided that him and his sons and his wife were going to stand up against the entire U.S. Army. And they won. And they win. Okay? That's really what happened. And again, I would go into developing the picture for them a little bit more, but it's important to develop that picture. To develop the pictures for them of what it would be like if it was happening today, right? So I'll go into, I say, and what happened? People gave up hope, but really, and what was the message there? The message was that Hashem never gives up on the Jewish people. He never gives up on us. He cares about each and every one of us. He cares about each and every one of you sitting here tonight. Now, I just want to tell you that people think that miracles don't happen and that miracles were something that happened then. But really, all of us have many miracles and many times when we feel that we've been saved or we've been helped in a way that is supernatural in our lives. Okay? When I was 17, I was living in Israel for the year, and this was the beginning of the supposed, you know, peace talks. Okay? And I got on a bus. I had to get back to class. I was in the center of Jerusalem, and I had to get back into class, and I ran to catch the bus. I was the last person that got on the bus. I still remember my friends, you know, banging on, you know, in Israel, they bang on the door to make the driver open it. The driver didn't open it, and they were, like, so upset. We were the lucky ones that got on. It was a very crowded bus, me and a few friends. We pushed our way to the back of the bus. And right when we hit Beit Vegan, which is the neighborhood where Neve was then in, and that's where we were, I suddenly felt I never get travel sick. I have to tell you, I've never gotten sick on a bus or a car in my life. I suddenly felt really nauseous. I turned to my friend. I said, I got to get off. And I remember, like, pushing my two friends ahead of me and saying, we've got to push off. And they're like, we're going to class, and we're not coming with you. And I got off the bus. My foot hit the ground, and pow. Bam, the loudest noise I ever heard in my life. Okay, and I have to tell you, we were in the back of the bus next to the bomb. Okay, if we hadn't pushed up to the front, if I hadn't pushed my friends up, we would have been nobody was killed on that bus because by the time we were there, we were at the end of the route and I pushed them to the front. We were at the front of the bus and I got off the bus and none of us were harmed. That was one of the big miracles of my life. And I share like a small miracle, by the way. Then I share a smaller miracle. And then I go around the room and I ask everybody to share a miracle in their life. So an example of a small miracle that I give them is I say, okay, so we're on buses, so I'll tell you a small miracle. You know, like 2 days ago, well, I'm not going to say 2 days ago because I wasn't in Israel, but say 2 weeks ago, I ran out of my house knowing that I was late and I had to get to work, knowing what time the bus was coming, and I was sure that I didn't have a chance at making it. I was thinking, should I walk? I walked out, and guess what? The bus was 2 minutes late that day, and it got there when I got there. That's also a miracle, That's also a small miracle, right? And I said, God, please. I said, God, because I have to get to work. Please make a bus come. And the bus was late that day. That's an example of a small miracle. Okay, so what I do is I do a big miracle. I do my story. I do a thing. And then I go around the room and ask everybody to tell a story and a miracle of their own. Okay, that's one direction we took that year, yeah? Okay, now I want to take it a different direction. So again, I get to the point where we've thrown out the idea about the difference between the Greeks and the Jews. And again, how much you develop it is going to be what parts you go into it, okay? Please.
A little tangential, but is your experience when you give this share that most people can actually recognize the miracles in their life? And also, like, just anecdotally, do most people have a big miracle in their life, or is it...
So you want to know something very interesting about the big miracle thing?
Yeah.
So when I tell that, I always think, I make sure I tell that big miracle, and I tell like simple things, like I caught the bus, or a story about my daughter, or something that she was late, and that day the teacher was something, right? And the first time I gave it, I wondered, I want to tell you, I find that people like the concept, because people, you're not asking them to do a mitzvah, you're not, you know, pushing on something. It's something that people do feel, and many people have. And I want to tell you something. The first time I gave that story, somebody was in the audience who missed a plane that, like, crashed. And, like, almost every time I've given that, there's, like, one person who has had, like, a major either medical or
That's
something.
A miracle too.
Miracle, yes. Right. But I just want to tell you this, like, but I'm not really looking for the big miracles. I'm really looking for them to see the little miracles in their life, because the point I want to say is, and this is how, and then I want to say, when I'm done with that, what I do at the end of the shiur is I say, and by the way, it's the little lights, it's seeing the little lights in our life that's what keeps us going. It's when we can see the light in our life. So sometimes I won't go into, like, the miracles of, like, the hashgacha, but I'll go into, like, the lights in our life. Like, what lights up our life? What are the good points in our life? Okay, the point is it brings people to a discussion that's a nice place, and it connects it for them with God, which that's what I find.
It helps them show real spirituality.
Yeah, it helps them connect it with God. That's what I find is a great thing about doing a share like that, okay? Let me take it to the other way that I want to go. Okay. Yeah, I just want to tell you something about this, and this is, it's an important point you're bringing up, and I'm glad you brought it up. One of the issues with the Greeks, by the way, and I mentioned this, and I'm going to talk about, this is my next year, which is not as PC as this one. So if I'm nervous about PC, I'll give more this year. But if it's a group that I already know, I want to push a little more. And by the way, you know, it's funny, years ago I had this discussion with Ben-Sion Klatsko. We used to talk about, like, is it better to do something that gets people really upset at you and you get them really riled up, but at least you, like, move them into something, which is what he likes to do? or is it better to be like me? I like to do these more, like, parav shirim. But what I've learned is sometimes you really have to be able to hit into the issue. Sometimes by doing it, sometimes the fact that you're talking about Greeks and Jews, it's so behind that it actually, you could get a point in, like, I always say you could get a point in without, like, letting them notice. Like, lots of the times, like, I just want to say this, when I give shiurim, a lot of times I'm going to make statements that I want to put in there because I want to put the concept in, and I don't want to say that concept to them. So, for instance, one of the things is, anyone who's ever heard my, like, love, dating, marriage, I always say, why did God create this? Why did God do this? Now, I've just taken a premise that they don't have, which is that God did this, God created this. I've just pushed something in that nobody's going to question me on ever. Nobody ever questions that part because whatever, but you've stuck in a concept, okay? And that's one of the things you want to, like, when you give Divrei Torah and Shirim, you want to do a lot of that. So when I want to give you the next one, okay, where I talk about actually the difference between non-Jews, and where I can bring this up. I want to tell you something. I have never had somebody comment on that. And I've even taught this class in like Russian audiences where half the people, their fathers aren't Jewish, where you would really expect them to say something about it. But because you're talking about the Greeks, here's where the fact that it's so far from them actually works, okay? So again, remember I said the Greeks went in and they defiled the oil. Now, why would the Greeks care about defiling the oil? What was the idea here? Okay, now, what the Jews, now, and also, I want to say, it's one of the things that the Greeks wanted to do was, the Greeks wanted to take away the divide between Jew and non-Jew. They wanted everybody to be the same. They wanted us to all be cultural Jews. Why should we be different? We're all the same. After all, we all look the same. There's no difference between the way I look and the way my non-Jewish neighbor looks. We all look the same. Okay, one of the things, other things that the Greek army did, which is very interesting, is they broke the sorek. The sorek was like the mechitza. Non-Jews were allowed into the Beis HaMikdash, okay? And they had a special place they had to be, and the wall that divided it was called the sorek. The first thing the Greeks did was they went in and they broke the sorek. They made 13 uportsu chomots migdalai, right? Right? That was the sorek. They broke the sorek because their message is, there's no difference between me and you, okay? And again, the Jews weren't interested in destroying the Greeks were not interested in destroying the Jews physically. The Greeks were interested in taking out the spirituality of our lives, the depths of our life, the connection to God in our life. What were the decrees that they made? No mila. No bris mila means no holiness in the body. We're the same. Shabbos. Shabbos is the concept of holiness in the world. One of the things that always struck me, why would the Greeks care about the Jewish calendar? Who cares? I have a candy. Who cares if you have a Jewish calendar? Why was that so important to the Greeks? Okay, because that was the concept of the holiness of time. I already made a bracha before, just... Okay. Now, most people did not even realize the message of the Greeks. Most people didn't fight against the Greeks. Who stood up to fight against the Greeks? So I'm going to give you a different gear, so now I'm going to give you a different... Who was the first person to stand up and fight against the Greeks? Yehudis. Yehudis. What happened? There was a decree that anyone who was going to get married had to go to the Greek officer and live with the Greek officer beforehand. She was a bride. She was going to get married. She stood up, and by the way, they love to hear this matters. They've never heard anything like this, okay? She stood up in front of all these rabbis, and she started to take her clothes off. And the rabbis were outraged, and she said, You're all hypocrites. How could you do this? You don't care if I go to this Greek general and I'm going to be naked because you're so stand up and fight. And she's the one that convinced them to stand up and start to fight against the Greeks. Why did it have to be a woman? Okay? Now, by the way, sometimes when I start this shiur, I start with the question, why do women have to be there for candle lighting, even though it's a mitzvah shel zman grama? But you have to have an audience that already knows that, right? In other words, if they don't know that, then there's no point in starting it that way, right? Okay. So, why was it? It was the women. Why? Because the women, and why was it a woman who started it? Because, and by the way, then you could go into also talking about the courage of Yehudis who went to kill, there's the other girsa of Yehudis who went to kill the general, and talk about that. Okay, why was it the women? Because the women were the ones who understood the message of the Greeks. Because the women were the ones, thank you so much. Sure. That's very kind of you. You have to ask me if I need a breath. I don't think so, okay. Okay. The women were the ones, because women Okay, and now I want you to notice what I'm putting in here, and you'll know the word, but I'm never going to say the word. Because the women have the power of inner spirituality and have the a deeper understanding of the inner world, God created women with that potential to have a deeper understanding of the inner world and the spiritual world and the connection between the spiritual and the physical, both in our bodies and in the world. Okay, it's the women who light Shabbos candles, okay? Because of this, there's a certain inner potential that women understand. And women also, they're the protectors of the Jewish home and the sanctity of the Jews, the sacredness of Judaism. When a woman marries a man, she surrounds him seven times like a wall to show that protection. So the women were the ones who had the understanding of how this would affect the Jewish people. It was the women who were able to stand up for their Judaism. And now, again, you could go off into a whole thing about how do you stand up for your Judaism. You could go into the strength and courage, okay? But I'm going to end this for us on a different note because I want to end this for us, okay? And I want to just say this. For everybody who's sitting in this room who's working in Kiruv, okay, we are the women, okay? And we know the importance of the Kedusha and the connection and everything that we do. We know the importance of what we're doing in Kiruv. We know the importance of what it means to light up a Jewish soul. The message of Hanukkah that is there for the generations, that is there, is that we have the ability to light up. One person can light up. One candle can light 1,000 neshamas. A candle never diminishes. No matter how many times you light with it, it doesn't diminish the light of a candle. Candle represents that which is most both physical and yet spiritual. Okay? It is a candle, okay, that represents that. And it's the light of that Hanukkah candle that says that Hashem will never give up on us. And that we, as women, have the power, the unique power, to stand up and protect the Jewish people. Both in the way we are educating our families, the way we live our lives, and as Makarvim, the way we're working at trying to teach everybody. Okay? And that's the message that we should all glean when we light our Hanukkah candles. We have to know that that miracle never ends. That candle is still burning from generation to generation. And that's why, even though secular people aren't aware, the message of the Hanukkah candle means something to them. Because it means that the Jewish people we don't remember Greek culture. Very few people study Greek culture today. But Judaism is alive and thriving. It's because of us, because of the women. And we have to know that that's who we are and that's what we do for the Jewish people.
Thank you.
Okay. Questions? You have to join Nerla L for that. Yeah.
Maybe I'll talk to privately, but let's say I use Gateway to Judaism to teach real beginners about these things, mm-hmm. and we do it interactively. Let's say I wanted to give a broader talk. I just gave a broader talk, and I haven't done a lot of that. So
then you'll stand up so everybody can hear you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's say I want a real source for. Let's say women being powerful in Judaism. Oh. And I wanted to know where would I.